Hi, good afternoon. Matter we have on today, docket number 82516, Lee versus Patton. Counsel, are we ready to go? Are you reserving any time? Okay.
May it please the court. Prescott Jones on behalf of the appellant, Dr. Tanvin Lee. Your Honors, this court set forth in its prior opinions in the Chowdhury and the Branda case that when determining if a statement is defamatory, the court must look to the statement in its entirety, including the context of the statement, because as this court reasoned, words don't exist in isolation. This court also set forth in the Wynn versus Associated Press case, the Sahara Gaming opinion, and numerous other opinions that utilization of the fair report privilege as an affirmative defense by a defendant requires that the challenge statement be a complete and fair abridgment and a fair and accurate report of a judicial proceeding. Here, this court is tasked with conducting a de novo review of a district court decision granting summary judgment in favor of the respondents, Ms. Patton and the Patton Law Group, on the grounds that the statement is true and that the fair reporting of privilege applies. As the appellant sees it, Your Honors, the court is presented with two main issues. First, when determining the truth or falsity of the statement for purposes of ruling on a motion for summary judgment and a defamation per se claim, must the district court look at the statement in its entirety, including the context of the statement, or is a district court allowed to look at individual portions of the statement, devoid of context?
Well, counsel, didn't Mr. Lee concede that every statement in there is true?
Well, he conceded only that individual portions of the statement were true.
Which statements were untrue?
He took issue with the fact that it was entitled plaintiff's verdict. That's the only thing he took issue with.
So you're saying that's false? It was not a plaintiff's verdict?
Well, he's saying there was a defense verdict along with a plaintiff's verdict. There were two separate verdicts, one for some of the parties and a defense verdict in favor of Dr. Lee.
I have a kind of unrelated question, but to be clear, everybody, there was no hyperlink on the website to the docket, or was there?
There was no hyperlink. In fact, assuming Your Honor is speaking of the specific attribution requirement present in the Adelson case, what is argued by the respondents in this situation is that simply naming the case caption is sufficient for the purposes of having a specific attribution as required by this court in Adelson. The appellant submits that the standard set forth by the respondents would require an average reader who came across the defamatory statement in this case to not only Google the case caption, but also figure out the proper venue, locate the relevant documents, and be able to interpret those documents to then make the determination that this is the case that is being referenced by the statement.
So to be clear, what's document number 283 in the appendix is what your client is suing on, and that is all the information that was given as to where and what might be involved here. So there's no case number, there's no 8th Judicial District Court, there is no hyperlink as there was in the Adelson case. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Did you argue that at all? I didn't see that in your briefs here.
I don't believe the specific attribution requirement of the Adelson court was ever addressed in front of the district court. There were numerous other issues, as Your Honors are aware, but that specific issue was never argued before the district court.
And it wasn't argued before this court in your opening brief, was it?
No, it's not. That's correct. That became an certainly.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you about, can you hear me all right?
Yes, certainly.
In the last sentence of the statement on the portion of the record site that Justice Pickering mentioned, it says, plaintiff sued the dental office, Summerlin Smiles, the owner, Vaughn Lee, Tanvin Lee, pardon me, and the treating dentist, Florida Trevay, I may not have pronounced that correctly, and J. Park on behalf of the estate, herself, and minor son. What about the statement is false with respect to the relationship between Tawn Lee and Summerlin Smiles?
Well, it goes back to the argument that the entire statement needs to be looked at in context. Certainly, this sentence that Your Honor just referenced, standing alone, is entirely true. That does summarize the procedural posture of the complaint that was made.
And isn't it also true that the complaint alleged that Summerlin Smiles was sued as a DBA of Dr. Lee or Dr. Lee and his professional corporation?
The complaint alleges that it was Summerlin Smiles was named as a DBA of his professional corporation. It mm-hmm. should be noted for the court that Dr. Lee is a dentist at several practices. Mm-hmm. He's not simply defined by his Summerlin Smiles practice. He has others.
And isn't it also true that in 2020, this court reversed the district court's dismissal of the Summerlin judgment against Summerlin Smiles and Dr. Trevay and reinstated that judgment?
Just to clarify, I believe it was 2016.
You're right, 2016.
Certainly, the judgment of a matter of law in mm-hmm. favor of the Singletary defendants was granted in 2014, and then this court reversed in 2016.
So once again, isn't it the case, and I believe you've indicated it is, that the judgment entered in this case is entered against Dr. Lee as the owner of Summerlin Smiles?
Now, Dr. Lee as the owner of Summerlin Smiles had a verdict in his favor. There's a defense verdict as part of the record.
As to Dr. Lee individually, as to his medical practice, those were separate allegations in the complaint, correct? Wasn't there a vicarious liability assertion in the complaint?
Dr. Lee was never found negligent in any capacity whatsoever based on the Singletary verdict. The ruling was only against his professional corporation that was doing business as Summerlin Smiles. I don't believe there was a finding of vicarious liability against Dr. Lee individually.
So isn't a doctor who has a professional corporation under Chapter 90 personally liable for the medical negligence of its practice?
Well, I think the jury finding and the court ruling in the Singletary case was that he was not personally liable. There are potentially other owners. There weren't at this particular point in time of Tawn Min Lee PC. But he was specifically found to not be liable personally. And that's the entire thrust of the underlying defamation case brought by my client, is that he has other practices besides Summerlin Smiles, Tawn Min Lee PC.
So when the judgment was ordered, reversed, and remanded back to the district court in 2016, as you corrected me, Dr. Lee was never responsible for any aspect of the judgment.
Correct. Dr. Lee had a jury verdict in his favor as of the initial jury verdict entered in the matter in 2014.
And that wasn't just for his medical negligence. You're saying he had no liability by virtue of the fact that he owned Summerlin Smiles, his DBA, or his professional corporation DBA.
I think that's a separate argument, I think, from maybe what I'm kind of getting out here. So certainly...
Well, you've asked the court to examine this statement for its gist. And what I'm trying to understand is that at least after 2016, Summerlin Smiles, the entity, the business, was held liable by this court.
Correct.
For a portion of this verdict, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the question is, and here it's mentioning that the owner, Summerlin Smiles, and sued as the owner is Tawn Van Lee. That's not true?
That is true that he was sued as an owner. The issue I have is the title of the document is Plaintiff's Verdict 3.4, or title of the statement, my apologies, is Plaintiff's Verdict $3.4 million. It disregards the defense verdict in favor of my client individually, who was sued as the owner of Tawn Min Lee PC.
But you're saying that there's no basis under which your client is personally liable, whether by virtue of the medical malpractice claim or by virtue of his ownership through the professional corporation of that business.
I think if we consider liability as only an owner of a professional corporation when he individually was found not negligent, mm-hmm. that would ignore the corporate form and the strong corporate form we have in Nevada related to entities.
Well, I acknowledge that, except that Chapter 90 doesn't extend that protection to professional corporations for the breaches of their professional negligence.
I think it's a bit of a tenuous connection to say that my client was found personally liable in any capacity, whether it's mm-hmm. as a treating dentist or as an owner of.
Okay, so, I'm taking up too much of your time. Go ahead, sir.
I'm happy to discuss, certainly, yes, Your Honor, but I'll proceed. Right. Thank you.
Could I jump in real quickly on one of those questions, though? Because it sounds like you're conflating two things. When you said your client wasn't found individually liable as an owner, the special verdict form, I think, asked whether he was negligent in his treatment and care of the plaintiff, not whether he was negligent in some capacity as an owner. That's why there was a question about Summerlin Smiles, correct?
Well, correct. I mean, we referenced the fact that he was sued as an owner because that's the argument that's been put forth by the respondents in this particular case. He was sued in his capacity as an owner, but in any individual capacity whatsoever in the Singletary case, he was found, he received a verdict in his favor. There was no adverse verdict against Dr. Lee in any individual capacity arising out of the Singletary case, and that's the entire basis for my client's underlying claim in the district court.
But what I've been getting to is the statement that was on the website doesn't say anything about your client in terms of care and treatment of the patient. It was just your client was the owner of Summerlin Smiles. I mean, if anybody has the big gripe here, it would seem to be Dr. Park, right, who was acquitted of any liability at the time of trial and is listed in the statement as a treating physician. So if an argument could be made implicitly that he somehow was part of this verdict, maybe he's got an argument, but it doesn't seem to apply to your client.
Well, I think the issue is that while the statement itself does reference the fact that Dr. Lee was the owner of Summerlin Smiles, it doesn't attempt to limit in any capacity the fact that he was sued only in his capacity as the owner of Summerlin Smiles. It lists him as the owner, but it makes no delineation between his ownership capacity and his capacity as a dentist.
I have another question, which I'm not clear on this. The first sentence in this page 283 says dental malpractice, wrongful death, plaintiff's verdict, $3.4 million. The next line says description, Singletary versus Ton Vin Lee DDS et al. A normal reader reading that who is not a lawyer would think what? When they read that, it seems to me you're saying that they sued and got $3.4 million in a wrongful death malpractice case against this person. Down below, it talks about ownership liability, and you're engaging with my colleagues on that issue. But who determines, is this a question of law that we should be parsing through and say this is absolutely clear that this doesn't suggest that he was found personally liable, or is this a question for the jury that gets this case?
And this court's prior case law on the topic has ruled multiple times that when a defamatory statement is capable of two different meanings, or there's any ambiguity present, that it is a question of fact for the jury to determine and cannot be determined as a question of law.
And do headings matter? In other words, like when I read a newspaper, I go to the bold heading first, and then I look below if I have time and interest, and then that's the first paragraph, and then I read on into the nitty-gritty. What rules apply to that in the context of this kind of a statement?
Well, the context is, what would the average reader think looking at the statement? And, you know, there has to be some understanding that this is a blurb on a website that is treated as admitted by the respondents as an advertisement by the attorney. Anyone who goes thinking about retaining the respondents as their attorney would go through and see plaintiff's verdict, $3.4 million, Singletary versus Tomlin v. Lee, DDS. Are they going to continue to read the body of the paragraph? I think it's unlikely, certainly.
But I thought your argument is that we look at the gist of the entirety of the statement, and isn't that exactly what our defamation law says?
Certainly. I think
you don't just stop reading at the end.
I think that's a separate question, certainly. And the idea is that...
No, for purposes of judicial evaluation of a statement before it goes to the jury, you look at the whole of the question, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly. But I think what's missing in this particular statement is that there's no indication he was sued only in his capacity as an owner of Summerlin Smiles. He's listed in the caption as Ton Vin Lee DDS. He's listed as an owner, but he doesn't say he was only sued in his capacity as an owner. if it included mention of the fact that he got a defense verdict in his favor, I think we have a different story here, but that's not the case, unfortunately, with this particular statement. If I may reserve my very brief time for a quick rebuttal and quick conclusion.
We kind of had you on the hot seat, so I'll give you an additional 3 minutes and extend the same to your opposing colleagues.
Much appreciated. Thank you.
Good afternoon, David Snyder on behalf of the respondents, Patton Lee and Patton Law Group, PLLC. May it please the court. At first blush, this case appears of little consequence, I think, to folks that don't pay attention to defamation law. It's an attorney posting a caption, a two-sentence summary on her website about a case she tried. Yet this case touches upon weighty constitutional and common law issues, specifically the right to free speech under Article 1, Section 9 of the Nevada Constitution, defamation cause of action under Nevada common law, and one of the many interactions between the two, the fair report privilege. Thus, whatever opinion or order that this court ultimately authors will shape the contour of all three, which is why this court retained the matter, assigned it to the en banc panel, and elected to entertain oral argument. First, I'd like to begin with a few undisputed facts. Then I would like to address the district court's proper application of the fair report privilege. And finally, time permitting, I would like to address whether the post is capable of defamatory construction. Despite the instant matter's tortured history, the facts are fairly simple as it relates to this appeal. Dr. Lee owns a dental practice, Summerlin Smiles, the negligence of which contributed 25% to the death of Reginald Singletary. That is the gist or sting of what actually transpired. After trying the case, Ingrid Patton posts on her website, second sentence is this court's already reviewed, that the plaintiff sued the dental office, Summerlin Smiles, the owner, Tonvin Lee, the treating dentist, Flores Revai, and Jai Park, on behalf of the state herself and her minor son. This statement states every single defendant's relationship to the case. Now, this case is a defamation per se cause of action, as alleged in the Second Amendment complaint. And that's any, so to recover, obviously, Dr. Lee would need to show that this statement tended to injure him in his business or professional capacity. And again, as this court noted, Dr. Lee admitted that every sentence in the post is true, except he did not remember the verdict amount. This court's long recognized the fair report privilege. And in Nevada, this privilege belongs to all. And this court does not distinguish between who is claiming the privilege. And I think that's what's important to begin with as we evaluate this posting on this website. It's not so much that this posting was on an attorney's website. The law would apply the same as if this same statement appeared in the Nevada Appeal or the Reno Gazette Journal or the Las Vegas Sun or the Las Vegas Review Journal or the Nevada Independent. The public has a manifest interest in being aware of what transpires in reports, and that is the basis of the fair report privilege. The public relies on accounts of what happens because they can't be everywhere at once. So if defamation liability attaches too readily or too easily on reports of judicial proceedings, it will chill the willingness of people to talk about what goes on in our courts. So from Thompson versus Pawnee in 1880, Drunikovich versus Mollart in 1929, Circus Hotels versus Witherspoon in 1983, Sahara Gaming Corp in 1999, Wynn versus Smith, Adelson versus Harris, this court has expanded the fair report privilege. It has eliminated exceptions, and it has expanded the type of proceedings and state actions that it applies to, because it's important that our people understand what goes on in our courts.
Mr. Snyder, would you agree that under the fair report privilege, it has to be shown that the summary provided is fair, accurate, and impartial?
Yes, Justice Kadish, thank you for your question. And I think this court can learn from the cases cited in Common F of Section 611 of the Second Restatement to try to determine whether or not a report is fair, impartial, or accurate. And unfortunately, we have to turn to extra authority because despite addressing and engaging with the fair report privilege, this court has yet to provide a, this court has yet to address a case where it has had to compare a statement and determine whether or not the gist or the sting or its substantial accuracy is sufficient that it can bring in.
Looking, looking at comment F to, comment F to section 611 of the restatement, which you just alluded to a moment ago, there was a phrase in it that caught my attention, which is, thus, although it's unnecessary that it be exhaustive or complete, et cetera, it cites as significant the use of a defamatory headline in a newspaper report, qualification of which is found only in the text of the article. And I highlighted that as I read it because I didn't get any comment about that sentence in comment F, because it seems to me to apply to the document that's 283 in the appendix. In other words, and I read it to your colleague, and I won't take your time by rereading it if you have it in mind. The first sentence says 3.4 million dental malpractice, Singletary versus Lee, no case number, no docket. But that, just reading that bold heading, and if you stop there, you would think, oh, Lee got held liable for 3.4 million in a dental malpractice. And that seems to me to fit with what comment F takes outside the fair report privilege. Could you comment on that?
Yes, Justice Pickering, I will do my best to answer your question. I think that whether it is a heading or whether it is the text of a particular publication, I think the court needs to determine whether the gist or the sting of either is greater than what actually transpired. And I think some of the cases that we provided in our briefing, which I would gladly talk about now, can kind of help this court figure out whether a post has kind of gone beyond what is substantially accurate such that the fair report privilege would not apply. I found an interesting case out of the Louisiana Court of Appeals, Hopkins versus Keith, where a newspaper reported that a person had a conviction for running a gambling game, scandalous behavior in New Orleans. And in reality, the man had actually forfeited a bond and did not have some kind of, did not have that kind of conviction. The court was careful to explain, like, these significant legal distinctions might matter to you or I or learned practitioners of the law, but what matters is it similar enough to what transpired in the mind of a layperson?
But from the perspective of this dentist, it strikes me, in the conviction case you're talking about, the person was convicted of something, were they not?
No, they actually were not.
Okay, they were not.
But the fair report privilege nonetheless attached in this case and precluded the newspaper from liability.
Okay. What does this sentence in the restatement apply to in the comment if it doesn't apply to this type of situation?
Again, I think that when you're dealing with any question like this, there's not going to be a bright line rule because the court's always going to have to review the context of the post and compare that to what actually transpired or whatever's at issue. And I think it's always going to require this court, whether it's a heading or whether it's a substantial text, to determine whether the gist or the sting of the heading is greater than what actually happened here. With respect to Dr. Lee, he brought a cause of action for defamation per se, so he's saying that this post harms him in his professional capacity. I think a layperson in reading this is going to come to the same conclusion, whether or not Dr. Lee's practice was found liable by a jury or whether or not he himself. They're probably not going to want to use his practice to remove their wisdom teeth.
Did you think the argument that Justice Hardesty was alluding to about Chapter 90 and individual liability for professional corporate verdicts?
No, Your Honor, that those arguments are not in the
parties. Okay, thank you.
I'm not prepared to answer that, I'm afraid. Justice Sylvie, did you have a question?
I did have a question, and I wanted you to expand upon what you did put in your briefs regarding the sting and the test from the Dameron case.
From Dameron, yes.
Dameron. Sorry, I didn't say it right.
I might be saying it wrong as well,
Your Honor. And that really is really kind of like you did, in fact, put that forward to us, and
yes.
I just wanted you to.
So in Dameron doesn't address what we were just discussing here, right? Because Dameron doesn't actually address whether a statement, the gist of the sting was such that the privilege would attach. This court, the federal court in the D.C. Circuit in Dameron just said that the case, excuse me, it might not be the D.C. court. Let me check my notes really quick. Regardless, in Dameron, the court was determining whether or not a magazine sidebar that was contained within a larger report had enough attribution such that a reader would be able to determine that that little caption, and it was about an airplane crash that happened at an airport out of Washington, D.C., since it didn't have any reference to an official proceeding, and since it didn't have any reference to a Federal Transportation Safety Board report, a reader reading that would conclude that that statement was based on the author's own investigation. So there was no information whatsoever that someone could conclude, a reasonable reader can conclude, oh, this is just a summary of a report. And the Dameron court didn't even address whether or not that caption was substantially accurate such that the report replied. It just rested on that point. There's no reference of a proceeding, no reference of a report. It's outside the fair report privilege. Here, this post has a case caption that anybody can put into Google, Singletary versus Tonvin Lee, and you will find the case. And they can read for themselves to determine what actually happened in the underlying matter. And candidly, I did it this morning just to make sure that it's still there, but anyone can bring it up and put the synopsis and they'll see. I believe it brings up the docket number. I think it was in the 6,600s where this court dealt with this case at an earlier time, and it distinguishes who the jury found liable and who didn't. It doesn't take much time.
Let's assume that the average person doesn't go try and track down the case and look up information there. Under this idea of the sting test, if somebody puts this statement out that says, I received this dental malpractice verdict for $3.4 million for this gentleman's death after a tooth extraction, and these are the people I sued and the capacities in which I sued them, without changing anything, how does that produce the same effect in the mind of the average reader than a statement would if it excluded the people from whom a verdict was not returned? Or does it? Or do you need to go look up the case individually to get more context to have that sting change?
Well, so I think the point of the specific attribution case law that this court adopted in Adelson versus Harris and drawing from Dameron was to make it such that people can rely upon official reports or other articles or such or whatnot, and include them into like a petition, I think was at issue in that case, and not have liability attached so long as it was really clear that, hey, I can see that this is drawing from a different source. I can go and follow up with it myself, such that there would be no liability for handling out that petition. I still think, and I'm not trying to dodge your question, Justice Vernon, but I think what we have to keep getting back to here when we're asking about the different parts of this post is, was it substantially accurate such that the privilege would apply?
Well, Mr. Snyder, it may be substantially accurate as to Summerlin Smiles, but if you're Dr. Lee, who got a defense verdict on all claims against him in that case, in fact, getting awarded his costs as a prevailing party, is it substantially accurate as to him?
I think for us sitting here, who are aware of the difference between the corporate form and an individual, then we can recognize the distinction between the two. But the fair report privilege isn't made for attorneys and judges. It's made for lay people who want to understand what's going on in our government. And I think lay people are not going to be so much concerned with whether or not the trial attorneys in Singletary versus Lee were able to pierce the corporate veil or otherwise somehow hold the partners in the limited liability partnership responsible for what happened within their business. I think they're going to be more concerned about, is this dental practice safe for me to go to?
So your argument is that the source of Dr. Lee's liability for the judgment is by virtue of his ownership of the business, which is what the last sentence says, not the basis of his being a treating dentist.
That's correct. And again, we have to understand how a layperson would read this. This sentence says who's the owner of the, that sentence says who's the owner of the business, what's the name of the business, and who the treating dentists are. And I think enough lay people have been to the dentist, they would understand that you're not going to have three dentists sitting over you while they're extracting your tooth. It's usually your dentist is there, perhaps with someone helping out. I don't know how clear it could be who's each party's relationship to the underlying controversy. And I think
But didn't your client, I mean, representing her client, sued Dr. Lee and alleged that he actually committed dental malpractice?
That I believe that that is correct. I think that the fact that the jury did not find him personally liable, yet found the practice which he owns liable, would still carry the same gist or sting for somebody that wants to use this practice. Again, he's here saying that this statement harms his dental practice.
We're just flirting with the absurd, because the statement that we're talking about is the title of the case. So, but for the fortuity that Lee DDS was listed first, if Summerlin Smiles was listed first, and so it was Singletary versus Summerlin Smiles, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Because it's clearly a plaintiff's verdict, right? Objectively, this is a plaintiff's verdict.
That is correct, right? Justice Stiglitz. This is a plaintiff's verdict.
$3.4 million was won, or something like that.
Yes.
And that is the title of the case.
Yes, Your Honor.
The title of the case doesn't change no matter who wins or who loses. That is the title of the case. And then the paragraph actually goes on to identify the roles of who is liable.
That's correct.
So wouldn't we be just flirting with the absurd to take a paragraph or a statement where every single sentence is conceded to be true? And is my understanding is conceded is true, and say that is somehow defamatory, which should have its origins at least in some falsity. We're to say that because the case title, we don't like the case title, which is the case title, that somehow that is transformed into a defamatory statement? I mean, help me with this, Mr. Snyder.
Well, ultimately, this is a fair report privilege matter. So this court has to balance the rights of free speech and the public's ability to know what's going on in the government with defamation law. And it's not an easy balance. I'll concede that, but at times. But this is such I hate to sound like I'm belaboring this point, but as to Dr. Lee's professional practice and capacity, the gist or sting of reality is that his dental practice's negligence killed one of his patients. I think we have to say that. This statement carries no greater sting to him than what is in that point. And for the court to start parsing hairs and parsing words here, I think would run afoul of chilling the ability of folks to talk about what goes on in our courts. And again, I invited this court to think about what would happen if you or I said the same thing on the streets to somebody. Would defamation liability then attach to us, or if one of our newspapers posted the same? I don't think that's a road that this court wants to go down. I mean,
well, what would you concede, Mr. Snyder, though, that maybe this wasn't worded in the best way? At least it's a cautionary tale on the importance for attorneys to be very accurate and very diligent in how they report on things that have happened in a court. Understanding what you're saying about the need to report to the public about what's happening in the courts, there's also a very need to not be reckless with language.
I think that what's important is that when we post things online, that we have to make sure that the gist or the sting of what we are trying to say does not exceed what actually transpired. I think that we cannot embellish. I think that we cannot add inferences when they didn't actually transpire in the underlying proceeding, which I think comment F and the case law supporting all bears that out. I think that at its core, our citizens' right to free speech and to know what goes on in the government is too important to bend to the pecuniary interests of Dr. Lee in this instance. I mean, his patient unfortunately lost his life, and Ingrid Patton posted about her successful verdict. And I think for this court to attach liability in this statement would move us in a direction that's contrary to this court's fair report privilege. Seeing that my time is up.
Colleagues, any additional questions for Mr. Snyder? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Prescott Jones again for the appellant, Tom Lindley. I'd like to direct this court's attention to what the respondent said in their brief at the top of page 21 as to how an average reader of the statement would determine whether or not it had a greater gist or sting than the reality of the situation. This is their words. If a reasonable juror read all the motion practice, transcripts, and verdict from Singletary, he or she would learn that. And then they talk about the facts of the case, including the fact that Dr. Lee is an owner
of Summerlin Smiles. Is this what this court wants to require in terms of the gist or sting requirement, in terms of perhaps the specific attribution requirement?
But they don't have to read all the motions and pleadings. They could read the other two sentences that are attached to the blurb. They don't have to go in and dive into E-Flex or whatever thing and read that to know. It says the role of Dr. Lee right there in the statement.
The concern that we have, Your Honor, is that the fair report privilege by its nature, by the opinions of this court, requires that the statement be fair, of course, but also complete. They listed plaintiff's verdict, and I agree from a plaintiff's attorney standpoint, if you get money recovered for your client, you consider it to be a plaintiff's verdict.
How is the gist different when you go to the complaint here, where it talks about Summerlin Smiles failing to give any kind of aftercare, which leads to, you know, not giving him the right or correct medical attention postoperatively, and he ultimately dies. How is the gist different, whether this doctor sued individually or his practice failed to give the patient correct postoperative information?
Understanding Justice Hardesty's concern about NRS 90 and the differentiation between the corporate form and a typical Nevada corporation and that specific to this type of professional corporation, Dr. Lee is not his practice. Dr. Lee has other practices. Dr. Lee may never, may at one point not be associated with Summerlin Smiles. The issue is when you post a statement like this on the internet, you don't take care to delineate between what plaintiff's verdict was, what the defense verdict was. This statement doesn't go away. This court's certainly familiar that this be searchable for all time. I found it this morning, as a matter of fact, quite easily, just searching for my client's name. It still shows up. It will still follow him, and will follow him in his personal capacity, not necessarily as his capacity as an owner of Summerlin Smiles.
So if the case title was not on that blurb, would we be here? If the case title, Singletary versus Lee DDS, would we be here having this conversation?
I'm not quite sure, Your Honor. It's certainly a hypothetical that is an interesting one. The issue that my client ran into and why he brought this case in the first place, as set forth in his deposition, is that when you searched his name on Google, that was the first result that came up.
So my question is, give it your best shot. If I took those facts out, mm-hmm. I appreciate the hypothetical, Singletary versus Lee DDS, took that title out, said plaintiff won $3.4 million and had the same sentences below it, would you say that was defamatory?
Well, I would submit to this court that by naming Dr. Lee simply as
the owner, okay,
correct, but not carving out the fact that he received a defense verdict.
You said you have to carve it out, or it's defamatory because it says he's an owner, but there's more to it.
Well, it's still, at the end of the day, it's listed only as a plaintiff verdict. It's not listed as, if you're going to, when we're looking at through the eye of a typical reader.
Is a typical reader shopping for dentists or lawyers when they're reading this blurb?
The issue is that the statement was viewed by persons who are typical readers who are shopping for a dentist, and that's why my client brought this claim in the first place.
All right. Colleagues, any additional questions for Mr. Jones? Okay. Counsel, thank you for the briefing. Appreciate you being here for the arguments. Matter stands submitted. We'll stand in recess until 10 o'clock.